Hi, I'm Sue Nelson from the Food Talk Show on Channel Radio, and I'm at the NEC in Birmingham at the Food and Drink Expo 2016. It's absolutely huge. There's over 1,200 exhibitors here and suppliers, and there's loads going on. There's 100 informative sessions, seminars, whatever. And Paul Andrews and I are going to wander around and meet some really interesting guests and see what they're up to.
Look at this trough. Have you seen it?
Listener.
It's huge.
Sue has appropriated a trough full of cake. I'm going to take a picture of that for my Instagram account.
I mean, how long is that? It's about 2.5 foot, 3 foot
about,
long.
It's about 2.5 foot of pieces of cake there.
Yeah.
And I've never seen anything like that. And
it's like a wooden... It is a trough.
It is a trough. There's no other way to describe it.
It's
a of cake.
Cakes and bits of little cake. Bits of those nice crispy things.
All nicely chopped up in little mouth bite-sized bits. Mm. Just so that I can be working my way through eating this while you're talking to this lovely couple here.
I'm talking to Trevor Little and Lorette Moore of Cobb's Bakery. And in front of me I've got, it looks like some lovely cake with, look like cranberries on or something like yogurty. And then I've got that, my favourite from a kid, the Rice Krispie chocolatey
Crispy cake. Rocky Road, they call it sometimes,
is that what they
don't
call
they?
It now?
No, that's the crispy. That's definitely crispy. The crispy with Mars.
And then what's this next one here?
This is a Mutiny Bar, which is cherries, coconut, Belgian chocolate with a tiffin base.
And then this looks more... What's that?
Fruity flapjack. And then we have gluten-free Dundee slice, like a fruit cake.
Look at that. What are you going to start with?
Well, a dribble, actually, is what I'm going to start with.
The smell is lovely, too.
It looks fantastic.
Yeah. You want to eat, and I'll talk to Trevor.
You talk to Trevor and Lorette, and I'm going to try some of this Rice Krispie cake.
You're based somewhere really interesting.
We're based in Drumna Drocket, which is a village on Loch Ness in the Scottish Islands.
Loch Ness. And do you have a bakery, a proper bakery on the high
street? Yes, we have in the village. We took over the village school, which was redundant, and turned it into a working bakery.
Mm. How fantastic. So that would have been the centre of the village.
It literally is,
with the children.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Going there, and
now you've
made it the centre of the village as a bakery.
Yeah, we have. What actually happened was we had a village bakery which was supplying our hotels, because we have hotels and coffee shops in our business. And the village bakery run by Sheena, who is now our head baker, just outgrew itself. We kind of brought her into our business. And from there on, it's kind of, it's gone in the right direction.
So even for a small village, I mean, there's tons of stuff here.
Yes.
And you managed to make a successful business out of what must be quite a small catchment area.
You're absolutely right. And initially, we were buying this cake for our hotels and coffee shops. And this bakery was supplying various businesses in Inverness. Mm. When we took it over, we had bigger plans.
Yep.
And we were approached by various sources. Where can we get this cake in Scotland? So we started distribution in and around Scotland, mainly the Highlands, and then we moved further south to the borders.
Sure. Okay.
And just in Scotland?
We now do England as well. Three years.
South of the border.
Yeah, we've been in business about 14 years, and 3 years ago we stepped over the border. And we did the northeast of England, which is where I'm from, as you can detect
say,
my accent.
Got a Scottish accent.
No, I've got the posh accent coming on now. Yeah. And I'm on the radio. But basically, we 3 years ago we stepped over the border, and we covered the northeast of England, and we're progressing south rapidly. This is our first tour in the water in Birmingham, as far south as we've been presenting the products. But we have distribution in place right down to Bicester.
Fantastic.
What was that first taste like, Paul?
You're
very quiet.
I'm not telling you.
It's not usual for you to be that quiet for that long.
It was absolutely fabulous, and I'm really, really beginning to worry here.
What did you have then? Do you have the crispy
I had the crispy cake.
And Lorette, what do you do in the business?
Well, I'm the same as Trevor. We're brand ambassadors for Cobb, so we're obviously flying the flag for them in England. So pretty much we look after everything here, don't we, on this side of things?
Oh, no, this one's better than that.
Fighting over them.
Sorry, Lorette.
Sorry.
I've just had this one. This one's really cracking.
I just had the coconut one.
This one you've got here is cranberry pistachio, which is really, it looks great, but it tastes great.
Mm. Visually, that's a really good seller because it's nice and colourful. And
it sounds healthy.
Yeah. Mm.
Even though it's probably not, it sounds healthy.
That's really, you should try that.
I am going to force myself to try all of them, to be honest.
You're going to have to try them. So sorry, you said you're in a... Sorry, we just got carried away with eating there. So you're a brand ambassador.
Yeah, so we're basically flying the flag. We deal with obviously all the sales in England and obviously doing the food shows like this today. So, yeah.
And do you get sort of try and get feedback so you're constantly... feeding that back to the guys to say, yes, you know, can you change that product a little bit? Can you, people really like this? Can we add
new
that?
New ideas as well, because, you know, in Scotland we have some quite traditional recipes. Obviously, there's, you know, customers like certain things here as well. So, we do. We communicate that and we talk a lot and we work well as, you know, it's a lovely family-run business and we work well as a team.
I think one of the key things that we do is it is handmade. We don't have any preservatives or additives in there. It's stuff you would find in your cupboard home, and this is how the cakes are made. So it's quite unique in that respect. Customer-wise, we've got some fairly big players in the industry. Manchester United buy a bit of cake off us, which is good for the Red Cafe.
So Rooney has a bit
probably,
of somebody's cake, because you could do losing a bit of weight, didn't
you? That explains a lot.
A bit chunky, didn't he, Rooney?
Yeah, so we do football clubs because it kind of works for them, but we do a lot of tourist attractions. Our biggest customers are universities, colleges, education sector for sure. And then we do a lot of independent coffee shops and such like, and garden centres.
I have to say,
did you like that one with the
No.
I noticed it's gone. I've still got half of mine left. Yours is gone already.
The one consistent thing that I've felt about all of them is they've got that homemade quality.
Yeah,
it doesn't taste like a mass-produced product.
No.
No nasties. Well,
it's like your favourite aunt's made that and bought it around.
Both me and Lorette, when we first started with the company, we did our induction course and had to spend a week up at Loch Ness, which is really difficult, isn't it? You know, a beautiful place like
Somebody's
Loch Ness.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yes. We worked in the bakery and literally we spent time in the bakery making these cakes and, you know, handmade cake, but there must be some machines. There literally isn't. It is a great experience to see these guys making proper cake in volume.
So, obviously you're based up in Scotland and you're gradually moving south.
Yep.
Is there any way in which us Southerners can get your cakes
at
all? Yep,
absolutely. They're not a retail product in England.
Fine, I get it.
They're very much food service. Yep. So you will see these in various establishments, not all of them yet, but you'll see them out there in various establishments.
Hotels, things like that. Yep.
Right.
So if you are in the business and you're interested in getting these sorts of products, which are absolutely delicious.
They're gorgeous.
They really
absolutely
are
gorgeous.
Got that homemade feel about.
How I'm going to finish this, I'm not sure, but I'm going to have a good go at it.
Try that one at the end. they just need to go onto your website, which is cobs.info.
Yeah.
But it's a business to business, so if you're in the industry, it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah.
If not, please just make an inquiry and we'll tell you where you can get the cake, you know, as well.
That's not true, isn't it? That's like fruitcake.
That's a Dundee slice.
Exactly. I love fruitcake, excuse me, I'm going to have some of that one.
That's gluten free.
If you go on the website as well, there's a nice, short video. We've just redone the video. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing, which actually showed you the
fruit cake for ages.
Yeah, that's
that's really nice.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So that's Trevor and Lorette, Cobbs Bakery, and that's cobbs.info.
Absolutely. And a fabulous, fabulous cake, guys. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Nice talking to you.
Cheers.
And we're having a whale of a time eating and drinking our way through everything.
It's the Berry Black Pudding Company, which is really, really famous. I know their product very well, and it's really great to talk to Peter Winkler, who's going to tell us a lot about this product. Do you know this company?
I think I love Peter.
Do you?
Yeah.
You do know this company then?
I do know this company. I am a big fan of black pudding, and I buy Berry Black Pudding in my local supermarket at least once every 2 weeks.
So Peter, tell us a little bit about the history of the company, because it's very, very famous, particularly up north.
The history is really part of the story of the company. It's what really sells the brand, the provenance.
Have you ever been to Berry Market? It's an amazing food market, isn't it?
I
don't know if it is.
Food and drink, you've got the meat and fish hall, which is fantastic. There's all local producers on there, veg. Black puddings, pies, pasta. You will get anything you want on Berry Market.
Well, I haven't been for a couple of years, but I presume it's as good as it ever was.
It is. I mean, it wins various awards.
It's great. It's a great food market. I mean, it's how food market should be, really.
One of the interesting things about this product is this is one of the archetypal products that expats have to have shipped out.
Desire, because along with Marmite.
Along with Marmite and baked beans and ketchup, is they have to have Berry Black Pudding shipped to them wherever they are in the world.
It never ceases to amaze us where this black pudding gets to. Yeah. So we have an export division that send it out to the obvious expat markets in Spain and France and Cyprus and places, but we know it goes out to Dubai and it goes out to Tenerife and Turkey. We've seen it all over the world, and you'll see pictures pop up on social media, and even we go, how's it got there? we send it to a distributor and it goes through the food chain, and we don't know where it goes, but it's all over the world.
For anybody that's not familiar with black pudding, can you tell us what the ingredients are? You've got a little jar in front of us.
It's very, very simple ingredients. This jar in front of us is the blood, and if you want to have a smell of that, it's a dried blood that we use, and that's mixed with a very secret blend of herbs and spices and rusk.
Right.
There's four people have the recipe for that. That is still in the Morris family.
Right.
Under lock and key.
Under lock and key. Richard, who's our production director, it's his family recipe, and that's been in his family for going on 100 years now.
Right.
Did you know that there's a very, very specific herb that goes in black pudding?
No, is there really?
That you never hear about, ever, except for black pudding, and that's pennyroyal, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Pennyroyal's a herb, and you never hear about it. It always goes in the best black pudding, in my personal opinion.
Now you've given that away, does that mean we have to kill you?
No. That's quite well known, isn't it? Yeah.
There's a lot more goes into it than that. And it's also the process.
It's a blend.
Because we don't just throw everything into the mix. It's put in a certain process, it's mixed in a certain way so that everything's blended together to make that consistency. Mm. But you have the blood mix, you have oats, you have barley in there, not oats, and you have fresh onions. We never use anything dried. Rubbed herbs.
A whole mixture of herbs.
Okay. Lovely.
And did you know also
we mix it with water,
that you can eat this raw, Paul? I think people overcook black pudding.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm a bit of a heathen. I'm a bit of a heathen because I like overcooked black pudding.
Oh, right. I like
it when it goes crispy.
On the edge,
all around the edges. So I have a tendency to overdo it quite a lot.
There's a bit of a debate on this, whether you fry or grill, which you say, well,
you've got to fry,
makes it crispy.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Grilling.
Or if you go on Berry Market, you would be thrown off the market for saying anything other than it should be simmered and served in a ring, sliced in half, with a bit of piccalilli or some vinegar or a bit of mustard on that.
Yeah. Do you put anything on your black pudding?
Only ketchup.
Ketchup. God, you're such a heathen, Paul. Ketchup.
Yeah.
Well, tomato ketchup.
I always have black pudding as part of breakfast. Yeah. So it's poached egg, black pudding, toast, bacon, dollop of ketchup.
Dollop of ketchup, fair enough.
See, the interesting thing you mentioned there at breakfast, now we're moving away from that. Obviously, it's brilliant, it's part of an English breakfast, but the number of chefs now who are using it in starters, main courses.
Well, some years ago, you're absolutely right, some years ago, Peter, I had a restaurant called Wheeler's in Cornwall, in Port Isaac. And one of the reasons why I really love that restaurant is they had a starter of black pudding with a blackcurrant coulis on it as a starter, and that was gorgeous.
See, I like black pudding with scallops. I actually think they go rather nicely together. So you have bacon, black pudding, and scallops. Very nice, very, very good.
It goes really well with meat.
Yeah.
Together with lamb or chicken, pork, goes with apples.
But my advice would be cut it a little bit thicker, fry it quicker but higher, so you still get your crispy bits on the outside, but it's much more moist on the inside. Would you agree with that, Peter?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I like it very much. And I love the Berry Black Pudding Company, because for me it is the black pudding.
And quite some years ago now, I was working on a regular basis in Scotland, and they didn't have black pudding there, they had white pudding.
Yeah. What's the difference? Why is it white as opposed to black?
A white pudding is a completely different product.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
The only similarity is the shape of the sleeve that it's put in, and the pudding refers to the fact that it's boiled or steamed to cook it.
Yeah.
But the white pudding is 46% premium pork, and then you've got rusk and herbs and spices.
Just a different mix.
The herbs and spices are more aligned to what's in a black pudding rather than, for example, a Cumberland sausage.
Sure.
But it is, to all intents and purposes, a real premium pork sausage.
Right.
Whereas there's actually no meat in a black pudding. There's the blood and there's a small amount of fat, but no meat.
Back fat, And obviously the French will always say that they're famous for their boudin noir or their boudin blanc, which is their version. I believe you've entered competitions over in France, haven't you, with your Berry black pudding?
We have. We've been in one recently, and it was interesting because Richard's father, Jack, who supplied the black puddings originally to the market, he is actually a Knight of the Black Pudding, which is an award that you can win.
How good would that be, to be called Knight of the Black Pudding?
I'd like to be a Knight of the Black Pudding.
And they take it seriously. They have the full dress and a medal and a hat. And
wow.
They come out.
God, you've got to go for one of those.
Oh, yeah,
you'd so
absolutely,
like that.
Yeah,
Paul Andrews, Knight of the Black
Pudding.
Knight of the Black Pudding, yeah.
So he does have his medals to prove how good the puddings are. Yeah. I mean, we don't enter many competitions now. But back in the day,
well, it wouldn't be fair, would it, really?
No,
you just win them all, wouldn't
well,
you?
I think this was Jack's thing. He actually entered the competitions back in the 70s and brought the black pudding competitions over to the UK and became the judge. So he kind of stepped back from competitions at that stage.
Well, it's lovely to see you.
Absolutely.
Great product. If anybody hasn't ever had black pudding before,
try it.
They always worry, oh, it's blood and all that, you know, you really should try it, because actually you'd be pleasantly surprised.
Quickly,
lovely.
It is a traditional British dish. I know the French make it as well, but that's not here, not here. But this particular black pudding is something that
you can't
be British and have not eaten it.
No.
Basically, in my opinion.
And no excuses. I mean, we obviously sell the pre-packed slices in all the supermarkets, but we also do online, so you can get gluten-free, you can get the chilli version, the white, and we'll ship that out anywhere in the UK on the next day delivery.
Fantastic.
And remind everybody what your website is.
It's very easy, www.berryblackpuddings.co.uk.
Fantastic.
Thanks ever so much for seeing us, Peter.
Thank you.
Brilliant, Peter. Thank you.
Cheers. I'm very interested to try this. I'm with my drinking buddy Christy here, who produces the programme, and I'm. It's from a company called Ice Co, and they're a manufacturer of ice cubes. So six generations have been making ice cubes in West Yorkshire since 1860, and I've got Ginny with me and Jessica, who are going to tell me all about these lovely cocktails. So why have the company, after six generations, sort of branched out into doing cocktails? How did that arise?
You know that frozen cocktails are huge in America.
Oh, awesome.
And we started to see them come to the market over here, and we thought it would be great if we could create these products to offer to consumers so they can enjoy the bar experience at home.
So we've got pouches here, so they're sort of huge, big pouches. And if you feel them, that they're sort of slightly frozen-y, slushy, and then I presume you put that in your freezer, and then when you've got some mates around, I presume you say, would you like a frozen strawberry daiquiri, darling? And then you just pour that into a cocktail glass?
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
Exactly, yeah. So you buy them from the freezer, take them home. The idea is that as you buy them from the freezer, you can enjoy them that night. They're convenient. You can enjoy them as soon as you get home and not have to wait for them to freeze overnight for the next day.
Yep.
Squeeze them between your hands for 30 seconds or so, and they will become slushy in the pouch, and then you pour them into a cocktail glass. And they're ready to serve.
You very thoughtfully provided us with a straw. Shall we go for what do you fancy first, Christy? I'm going to have strawberry daiquiri. What are you?
That's margarita.
Margarita. Ah, your favourite. So,
okay, straight from the glass, or use a straw, whichever you prefer.
Christy's face, honestly.
It just needs
very
a little
happy.
Bit of salt around the rim.
Yeah.
And it'll be perfect. Lovely.
That's really good, because then you know the cocktails are really frozen. The problem with cocktails is often you actually do need a shaker.
Mm-hmm.
Not actually to mix the drinks, but to really put some ice in and to really make it cold.
Yeah.
And this is a really good way of getting around that, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And we've found as well that a lot of people perhaps don't have a cocktail shaker at home, or they don't want to have to buy the bottle of rum, the lime, the, you know, everything to make it. And perhaps maybe are nervous about how they'd actually make a cocktail, or they just don't know how, haven't got the time, they've got kids running around. So actually having these means they can have that cocktail on a Friday night when they want to relax, and it's quick and easy.
Well, that's really good, because you've got four different ones here, and as usual, you know, you'll have four friends around and they all want a different type of cocktail, so it's very hard to have a cabinet full of the right type of alcohol, isn't it, and make four different cocktails.
Exactly.
And what sort of strength are they? Because they do contain alcohol. So.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they're 5%, so it's sort of in line with a lot of ready-to-go drinks. The idea with them is not that they're super, super strong. It's that you can enjoy a couple of them on a Friday night at home with the girls.
All boys.
And for them to just taste really great. We say that, we laugh about that, but actually we do also get a lot of males that say how much they like them and would also enjoy them.
I actually haven't seen these in the shop, so how would I get hold of this?
Yeah, they are currently in Tesco.
Oh, in Tesco.
And they're in the freezer aisle. So
that's probably why I haven't actually looked, because I don't think to look in the freezer aisle for alcohol.
You would,
so it is obviously a major selling point for us is that they are frozen, so you can enjoy them straight away. Mm. But it's also a challenge for us because we have competitors in the drinks aisle, and that's where you'd expect to find them.
Yeah, yeah. People aren't automatically going to look for drinks in the aisle. That's an interesting marketing challenge, isn't it?
It is, and we're keen to keep them in the freezer because we think it's a huge selling point. But it's now trying to educate people that's where they find them.
Yeah, that's where they need to go. Mm-hmm. Well, very good luck with it.
I'm sold on it.
Yeah. We might ask them if we could take these four home and invite some people around
for the train on the way home.
Try
the
way home. Frozen. Very good idea. Very good idea. Thank you for joining us, and that's the Ice Company.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Channel Radio Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. We are at the Food and Drink Expo 2016 at the NEC here in Birmingham, are we not?
We are, and I've just walked past the most amazing stand. It looks really different from everybody else's. So there's a big tree growing up in the middle of it, and then there's mushrooms sprouting out of it. All different sorts of mushrooms. Yellow, pink,
white. Were you outside? White. Were you in the car park?
No. Right in the middle of the exhibition. It looks fantastic, yeah.
What's all that about? And they're brownies or something?
No. So I've just got a little packet here. Right. And you can see, in front of you, there's almost like banana coloured mushrooms, I would say, and a pinky, orangey mushroom.
That is very yellow, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
I've never seen a mushroom like that. That's like a mushroom with custard.
And it's like, they're called exotic mushrooms.
Are they?
Yeah. And I'm really fed up with going into the supermarket and buying those packets of, you know, white button mushrooms, and when you fry them they don't taste of anything. Do you find that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm very interested in these, and this is Smithy mushrooms.
Are they?
Yep, and they're based in Lancashire.
Are they?
Shall we
talk to them?
Yeah, I think we should.
Let's have a go at that. Yeah.
So we've got I've got John in front of me, John Dorian, he's the director.
Okay, and young Andy we got
and
as well.
Andy, yeah. Yeah. We've got the good looking Andy, which obviously John uses to sell the mushrooms on.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. What are you trying to say about John?
It's the wrong way around.
So how on earth did you get into growing mushrooms?
I was originally a plumber, gas fitter. I worked on this farm while I had no work.
Right, okay.
And it's built from there. Right. I end up owning the company now with two other partners.
You ended up owning the company?
With partners from South Korea and France.
Okay.
And we grow about 10 tonne of these strange looking mushrooms every week.
Can you, John, just step us through, listener, because you can't see it, we have a box of wild and exotic mixed mushrooms here.
Yeah.
As Sue described to you earlier, there's pink and yellow mushrooms and all kinds. Can you just walk us through what is actually in that punnet?
Well, we should ask Andy, because actually he's the sales guy.
It's a mixture. We've got, there's things that we grow ourselves. We've got oyster, we've got pink, yellow, grey oyster, and a few shiitake in there. We've got anoki, which you bring in.
Anoki is those ones that got very spindly, very, very thin sort of stalk, and only a tiny, tiny little head on the top. Yeah.
They're quite popular now, actually.
Mm. Do you cook those like you would normally?
I did a little bit of research when I started out. I found that quite a lot of gluten-free recipes use them.
Okay.
Gluten-free stir fries, and they use the anoki.
Right.
We've got white and brown shimeji.
Shimeji? I have never heard of that. Do you grow those yourself?
No, they're imported.
Okay.
And a couple of chestnut as well.
There's some wild mushroom in there as well. Sorry, we don't want to miss the wild mushroom hard in there. This is St. George mushroom.
And what's the difference between a morel and a normal mushroom?
Even in exotic, a morel is a mushroom grown in the wild. They grow in the wild, they go and pick them in the wild.
Okay.
We do supply morels.
So you forage for those?
But we do forage for them. And as I was saying, if I'd be lying on the beach in Barbados now if we could grow these, cultivate morels.
Okay, because that's what makes the difference. They're wild.
They're
you
wild.
Can't grow them commercially. The ones that you can grow, you grow. And you were telling me a story just earlier that you grew a mushroom that was worth £500.
I drive over to Belgium, I collect the spawn, I put the spores out and everything. It took me about 3 years, and I ended up with one mushroom.
So it was expensive.
And now you're all wondering why these morels are so expensive.
What did you do with it, John?
Did you eat it?
No. Oh, yes, I couldn't eat it. I spent a week looking at it.
You framed it.
Framed that one. But we just follow the wild mushroom season. Sure. So obviously the mushrooms that we can't cultivate, we just follow the seasons.
Okay. And is it true that you grow them in the dark, very damp?
No,
I didn't think that was true.
We treat them like forest conditions. in the growing rooms. Okay, there's the right humidity, we can 90-95% humidity, and they need 12 hours of light. We'd get no yellow if we didn't give them.
You wouldn't get the colour.
You wouldn't get the colour if there's no light.
They are amazing colours, aren't they?
They are absolutely.
And your opinion, Andy, you know, you're going out selling. What is the best mushroom to buy if you want to fry some in butter and put some on toast? What, in your opinion, is the best mushroom?
I think shiitake.
Shiitake.
Horse mushrooms as well.
Horse mushrooms.
Yeah, they're just out of season at the moment, but they're really good.
Good on toast.
A bit of garlic and butter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's lovely, isn't it?
Absolutely. And as you say, I mean, the colours and the textures and the shapes are all radically
so different. They're beautiful, actually.
So tell me, how do you sell these?
We supply anyone with mushrooms.
And so if somebody goes onto your website, smithymushrooms.com, they can actually order some online?
They can order online.
But you can get them in supermarkets too?
You can get them in supermarkets, online. That's our best-selling pack, which has got 10 varieties. In
right, okay.
We do a mixture of 10 variety pack, and it just sells like...
I'm sure it does.
Hotcakes or donuts, I've seen people queuing up for donuts over there.
Yeah.
Well, I really, really recommend that if you're used to just having white mushrooms or button mushrooms, you go into the supermarket and you can see some smoothie mushrooms, some exotic ones, you really should give it a try.
One of the things I like about that punnet of mixed mushrooms is there's a whole range of different mushrooms in there. So, I mean, you can buy that and experiment all in one go. You can taste off one against the other and you know, experiment with a different type of mushroom.
Love. Thank you, boys. That's John and Andy. Thank you very much for joining
Smoothies
us.
Smoothies mushrooms. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
I've been eating Carlisle sausages and I've been eating meats.
I haven't had any lunch, listener, and I just went to the sausage stand to get a little bit of sausage. And guess what?
They've all gone, haven't they?
They've all gone. Mm. They said some woman kept coming around here eating them all.
Well, they're so nice. I've also been eating quite a lot of stuff, but now I've decided I need something cool and refreshing after all that. So I've stopped.
I'm here.
No, not you. I've stopped at the Purbeck ice cream stand.
Oh, wow.
Because that sounds like what we should do next, I think.
Absolutely.
I'm dying to taste this, but the thing about Purbeck ice cream is it's got shed loads of double cream in it.
Has it?
Yeah.
Blimey.
Great for your diet, Paul.
Okay, so while you're scoffing your way through it, shall I talk to Patrick?
Patrick Ward, yeah, he's one of the directors.
Is he?
Yeah, I'm going to try.
Has he been in the ice cream business long?
I don't know. Have you been in the ice cream business long, Patrick?
I've worked for Purbeck Ice Cream 20 years.
Have you?
In June this year.
He doesn't look old enough. He doesn't look old enough, does he?
He started when he was
very kind, thank you.
So while Sue is scoffing her way through your ice cream, Patrick, why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
The first thing really that we try and tell people, so three types of ice cream, non-dairy, dairy, real dairy, and it's all designated by the amount of fat that you put into the product. So non-dairy ice cream, as the name suggests, contains no milk or cream or dairy products. Made from vegetable fat, water, thickeners, emulsifiers, all those horrible things. Cheap stuff you buy in the supermarket, still classed as ice cream. And then you have a dairy ice cream. Now you're eating onto the salted caramel.
Can you just keep talking
and we'll just eat?
We're fine. Can you just keep talking, mate? Because that salted caramel. Patrick, talk.
Carry on talking. So dairy ice cream, fat content between 5 and 10%, and then real dairy ice cream, anything above a fat content of 10%, which is where we position ourselves in the market.
Okay.
So we have 60% milk from the local farmers, comes from within the Isle of Purbeck, which is where we're situated, and then we use 22% Dorset double cream, so it gives us an overall fat content between...
You can really tell that texture.
We've just tried three ice creams, and I'm going to ask Patrick to go over them again, what they are.
I'm going to have some more of that one, Paul.
But I have to say, all three of them were lovely, but my favourite was the first one.
Which is sweet fennel.
Sweet fennel.
What an unusual thing to do.
Yeah. Many years ago, we were requested by a local fire brigade, because the owner of Purbeck Ice Cream, Pete, was in the fire brigade, to do something for a Mexican evening they were doing. So we made a chilli ice cream, and we launched it. We launched it here in 2002, it was, this very show. So since then, we've always tried to do something a little bit more unusual, a little bit more offbeat, something that gives me as a sales director ammunition when I go to a customer and they say, what's different about you, Patrick?
Well, for me, the fennel is my favourite by a million miles. There's nothing wrong with the other two.
I do like the marmalade one. The marmalade one's nice, but the fennel's very different.
There's nothing wrong with those other two ice creams. That does it for me every time. And the reason is I'm a big licorice fan. And that's got fennel and aniseed in it, which gives it that licorice-y taste. You can just stop eating any more of that, because I'm having that.
Yeah. I'll go on to the salted caramel.
Salted caramel's nice. I quite like a little bit of saltiness with that, that sweetness. Mm. And it's not too sweet. That's really, really nice. Mm. So tell us about how you're making this stuff. I know you've got quite a lot of staff down there in Dorset.
Mm. And deepest, darkest Dorset. Mm. So the process for ice cream manufacture, the first process is pasteurisation. So the raw ingredients, the milk's delivered to us from the farmer down the road, the raw unpasteurised milk.
Purbeck milk.
Purbeck milk, as it says in the product list. Mm-hmm. The double cream comes in as well. Then we add the British sugar, the British skim milk powder, and then we add the natural emulsifiers and stabilisers, which keep it all bound together. So what you get is this super smooth,
it's very
lovely, creamy. If you buy ice cream,
it's texture. There's no ice particles sometimes you get.
Correct. Mm. If you ever get a sandy, gritty,
yeah,
grainy, ice crystals, frozen texture to it, the only thing that happens to ice cream is temperature abuse.
You also make sorbets. I'm a great fan of sorbets. I think, and you don't seem to get so many sorbets out there. And what's the different sort of manufacturing technique that you've got? Because you've got 12 lovely ones from quince, very traditional English fruit, lime, rose sorbet, cider sorbet, and now beetroot sorbet.
Right.
What was the thinking behind that?
Beetroot.
Beetroot sorbet.
Very on trend at the moment,
is it?
We've decided that
you've bowed to convention.
We have indeed, unfortunately. We're leading the way in the ice cream marketplace for beetroot sorbet.
Okay. All right.
So, sorbet contains no dairy products. That's the big difference. So, it's got a lower fat content, but a much higher sugar content.
I really like the ice cream, and you can tell with that texture, it's a real treat. And we can find your stuff on purbeckicecream.co.uk, is that
indeed
right?
Indeed you can, yeah.
Highly recommend fennel.
Although
Christy, who's just sneaked over here to steal some, she loved the salted caramel.
Well, I have no problem with those other two flavours. Mm. The salted caramel was lovely. It's just me and fennel, and that taste does it for me every time.
I love it.
I could eat gallons of that without any danger whatsoever. I could do to that what you do to sausages.
Sausages, yeah. Okay, thanks for coming to see us.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Cheers, Patrick.
I've been wandering around the exhibition, the expo as it's called, and I've really realised I don't actually know what quinoa is, and actually I've never tasted it, so isn't that naughty? I know a lot of people call it quinoa. That's what it looks like. We actually pronounce it quinoa, and I'm with Christy, our producer here, and we've stopped off, and we're talking to Stephen Jones. Now, Stephen Jones grows his own quinoa. How good's that? I didn't know you could grow it here, but obviously you can. And I've got a packet here. It's this lovely graphics on it, and it's called British Smoked Quinoa. So, Stephen, you grow this on your own farm, is that right?
Yeah, I grow it on my own farm with my dad. And we've also, as of last year, started working with a lot of other growers throughout the UK to also help produce for ourselves.
So does it grow like rice? Are you sort of like rice fields? Or I've got this completely wrong.
No, I really
don't know anything about quinoa, do I?
Well, it's pretty much the same as wheat. You'll plant it in the spring, it'll start to produce a little set of cotyledonous leaves, and then grow through into a full plant that then produces the seed at the top of the plant. And it's that seed that we harvest in September.
And I'm looking at it now, it's tiny, tiny little seeds, a bit like slightly large sesame seeds. What are people using this for in terms of cooking?
Primarily, it's anything that you can use rice or couscous with. It's just a much healthier replacement. I'd say that the main use for it at the minute is in salads, where you might cook it, mix it with things like pomegranate, lime, other things that taste good really, or you might have it instead of rice in a curry, which is what I quite often have it for as well.
And the sort of texture's nicer, I think. Rice for me often doesn't really taste of anything, you know.
Yes.
And I don't really like the texture too much.
You'll generally find that quinoa's got a very pleasant nutty flavour to it, even more the British than the South American version as well. And you find that once you've cooked quinoa, it retains an ever such a slight crunch just at the end after you've eaten it. It is very, very pleasant. And I do agree from the point of view that rice can at times be quite bland, and it can be quite slimy, maybe is a good word.
Yeah, I think that's the texture.
That's it. Whereas quinoa is a really good alternative to that.
Yeah, and smoked. So how do you smoke it? Is that a really difficult process?
It's not particularly difficult, it's just very labour intensive. And I even have some here if you'd like to have a little smell.
I would like to have a little smell.
See what you make of it. It's been getting a very, very positive reception.
Can you imagine?
So, get your nose into that.
I feel like a horse. Yeah. With a nose bag. Wow, that is incredibly strong.
It is. I didn't expect that at all to be quite as strong. It's a really nice smelling.
We decided that there's no point smoking it if it's got a very shy and...
If you're going to smoke it, go for it.
You might as well go all out. We made sure we didn't go too far. It's not overpowering once you've cooked it. It's just a nice, subtle flavour that's there enough to definitely be able to taste it.
It's almost gammony flavour, smell, actually, isn't it? Almost.
Potentially, it's a slight meaty smell too,
exactly.
I guess. It goes really well, primarily, as I found, with sort of Moroccan or Mexican dishes, just again to replace rice. And it's got so much more flavour in it that it's just a great alternative that people seem to be absolutely loving at the moment.
Yeah. And you've got other sorts of things that you're doing. So you've got British white quinoa, the organic quinoa, and toasted quinoa.
That's right.
Tell me the difference. What's the difference?
Well, the leading product that we've produced so far has been just the standard white quinoa. Obviously, we then smoked that to create the smoked quinoa. We've had a lot of customers asking us for an organically grown version, which in 2015 we grew our first organic crop, have harvested it, and it should be another 4 weeks perhaps until that's ready on sale in our own retail packs. One of the things that we've also seen in there is the toasted. That is a product that we started developing probably about 6 months ago, and essentially we put it in a great big oven and turn the temperature up high and just let the heat start to caramelise the grains slightly. So it takes the sugars that's within them and starts to caramelise them. So when you smell the product, it's very peanutty and it's a very pleasant smell. So when you cook that in the grain, obviously it goes through to the final food, and it just is a great way of adding extra flavour to it. But
it's quite nutty. It's really, really, really nice.
That's it.
Do you know, I admit, I haven't... I know I've had it a couple of times in the salads that you buy and things. I really do think I'm going to have to cook with this, particularly as you say, if you're doing, you know, Mexican food or a really, really good accompaniment. Very good. So britishquinoa.co.uk.
That's correct.
Get on there, and if there's anybody listening who's wondering what they should stock in their farm shop, you definitely need to ring Stephen up.
Brilliant.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Bye. We're wandering around, and this is really unusual. We've seen so many different types of products, but I haven't seen anything like this. And Christy, as our producer of the programme, you're really thrilled by this, aren't you? Can you describe what's in front of us? It's really odd.
So we've got little pots of clear liquid.
They almost look like chemistry set. Yeah, you know, like a pipette at the top. You know, so a little squeezy pipette at the top.
And there's all sorts of different flavours. We've got mulling spices and
turmeric and peppermint, lemongrass,
and ginger.
These are little. So presumably you squeeze the top, take it off, and then you drop these drops in. And they're called spice drops. And they're from a company called Holy Llama. And I've got Gowri with me. Are you the founder? Gowri?
No, it's my parents.
Oh, your parents?
Yes, yeah. Okay. Who actually make the products.
And I was just saying to you earlier, you know, in my kitchen, in the cupboard, I've got all these spice jars full of, you know, powder that have been there for 4.5 years and have been in the dark, and I put them in curries and probably don't taste of anything.
No.
This is a much more interesting concept where you drop some spice drops. Good name for them.
Yeah.
Spice drop into what you're cooking, or even maybe cocktails or drinks or something.
Yes, I mean,
instead of using these ridiculous spices that are really old.
yes, that, and also, you know, these blend quite easily, and you get a consistent flavouring. You know, at any point you can just drop them in at any point. So, say for example, garlic. If you have made a pasta sauce and you've added garlic to it, and you've realised actually, you know, you could use a bit more garlic in that. You can't add it at the end. You can't chop garlic and add it at the end. Whereas these, you can just drop in at the end.
I think that's a good point about consistency too, because when you are using spices and things, depending on the age of stuff, it's sometimes not as spicy as it was, you know, when you first bought it. And this is very, very consistent. These lovely liquids, lovely colours, do they just, I presume they only last a couple of weeks, do they? Or
no, they last up to 3 years if it's stored right now.
That's a long time.
Yes,
3 years. So I could have... These are so much nicer. Don't take up as much space in your cupboard either. I'm really converted to this. I'm gonna go and throw out all my spice jars and have spice drops. I can't believe
to go home and cook.
Nobody's thought about it before. Are there any other products like this? I've never seen it before.
Well, in the manufacturing world, a lot of people do use extracts, but they haven't been made available in this format to, you know, consumers like you and me, households. So yeah, it is. There isn't anybody else in the market with this bigger range with these kind of, you know, vegan and gluten-free would suit all the dietary requirements as well.
Sure. So I've got one here that's lemongrass. How do you, I mean, there's only 5 milliliters because you only need a couple of drops, presumably. How do you make this? How do you get this lemongrass essence?
So for example, lemongrass, for example, you take the actual lemongrass, you know, herb, and you have to cold press it because if it's heat pressed, you lose the flavor.
Yeah.
So it's cold pressed and then it's passed through an extractor and the oleorisin, which is the actual oils of the spice or herb, pulled out of it, so extracted out of it, and they then are bottled up. So that's the way the extract
very, very strong. So you couldn't sort of drip that on your tongue. That would be horrendous.
Probably burn your tongue. We've had customers do that.
Really?
Yeah, believe it or not.
Yeah. And how many drops would you add to get that if you were cooking a family, you know, meal?
So for a bowl of, say, you know, a Thai curry, you probably need a couple of drops, really. So not more.
So very good value for money.
It's excellent value for money because in a bottle you get about 150 drops. So if you think one drop is equal to a stick of lemongrass, because we have a ratio on each of them anyway.
One drop is equivalent to a whole stick of lemongrass. Yeah. That's incredible. They're fantastic. They're space saving, they last longer, they're consistent.
Yeah.
The whole world needs to have these and stop having pounded spices.
So this ginger is one drop equals half a teaspoon of grated root ginger. You're going to get some really intense flavours, aren't you, when you're dropping those in?
Absolutely. I mean, we've tried them in, you know, just to flavour yogurts. You could just buy normal Greek yogurt rather than buying all these different flavoured yogurts and just put different drops in them.
I just think these are amazing. And they're made in India, aren't they?
Yes. It is my family business, and our factory is actually a government-recognised women's enterprise. So more than 80% of the staff in our factory are women.
Even more reason to buy. Even more reason.
Even better.
Even us three women sitting around the table. We're loving that.
It's all sort of ethically sourced, and, you know, we follow all the sort of 10 principles of fair trade. We're a member of the British Fair Trade Association for shops and suppliers as well. So
it's actually all sort of no good reason not to buy this product. And where can we get it whole? Because I'm going to buy a whole range of these now. where can I get them from?
Well, besides our website and Amazon, you can also buy them on Ocado. So if you shop on Ocado, or you can also buy them in Whole Food Market in London. And also in Glasgow, they have a branch in Giffnock as well. So,
but it's Ocado if you're anywhere around the country, not London.
Yes.
What's your website address?
Our website is holylamaspicedrops.com.
Holy Lama. And Holy Lama is H-O-L-Y. L-A-M-A, Holy Lama. I'm going on there as soon as this program finishes. So I'm ordering a whole batch. Fantastic.
thank
you for joining
much.
Us.
Thank you very much.
I'm just in heaven here. I've been to every single place and tasted loads of different food.
Listener,
it's amazing.
She's running around here. She's got things on sticks. She's got bits of chocolate. She's got honeyed drinks. She's loaded. She's loaded with stuff, listener.
Well, it's funny you should say that, Paul, because I just popped down there and there's a stand that's called Westaway Sausages. And
I saw you eating
absolutely
those.
Absolutely tastes amazing.
Yeah.
And I've got Charles Bourne here, who's the managing director. So I managed to snap him away from his stand, even though he's really, really busy. There's lots of interest in his sausages. And what makes them all different? I know your skins are different, what's inside's different. So tell me all about your sausages.
Well, my family have been making sausages for over 100 years.
Wow.
And so if we haven't got it right now, then we might as well give up.
Right.
Look, really juicy.
Yeah, I think that's a really key point, actually. You know, it is very much about authentic textures. And in these days of mass-produced food, you know, there's still time to do a product right with a correct time, care and attention and really make something special.
Absolutely. So can you tell us, Charles, how you source the ingredients for your sausages?
And what sort of cuts do you use? I presume they're pork.
companies. Yes, we're a pork only site, so in these days where speciation is on everybody's lips.
Oh, that's a good word. What does that mean?
Oh, I like that.
What does that mean?
I'm not sure I can say it, but I like it.
What does that mean?
Speciation is all about what animals go into our sausages, right. and we only use British pigs, farm assured British pigs that we source from the south of England. Right. And so we will buy up to about 3,500 pigs a week, and we'll make sausages at round about 6 miles an hour.
Wow.
But, so we could have a kind of sprint off on a sausage. Yeah. But they're made in small batches, just like you would make a traditional butcher's style sausage.
Right, okay.
So by that we mean natural casings, so we use chipolatas. So chipolatas use a sheep casing,
right?
Because a lot of them are using sort of synthetic casings.
The kind of manufactured sausage that you would buy in the supermarkets will tend to use a collagen casing, which is made from an extract of just beneath the hide of the animal and reconstituted and formed into a casing.
Sounds disgusting.
It sounds delicious, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. No. Anyway, so we're using guts, which is even better.
that's traditional.
Yeah, it is. We make, for example, puddings, or French call them boudin, and we make a white pudding. So we will use an ox runner or an ox middle. You meant to ask me this,
but what is it? I'm not quite sure what that is.
Let me enlighten you about casings.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, no, it's important because.
Do you like your sausage straight, madam, or do you like it with a bit of a bend in it?
Well, come on, sir. Interesting. You should ask that question.
Sorry, your glasses are steaming up, madam.
Glasses are steaming up, but also it depends what day it is.
Right, okay. Well, if we're going to make a straight pudding...
I'm so glad this isn't television, because I'm very late.
We're going to make a straight pudding, then we'll use an ox middle,
right,
which will give you a straight pudding, and or else we'll use an ox runner, which will give you a bent pudding.
Okay. Mm.
So you're on the latter, aren't you? I'm thinking.
Well, I'm desperately trying to not ask Charles what the difference is.
I'm going to move on to the ingredients now. Yeah, exactly. I'm feeling a bit outnumbered by men here.
I tell you a bit about size, madam?
No. Okay. Please don't. Let's concentrate. Let's just go on to the ingredients. So what?
You were talking about succulents, weren't you? And so I'm a great believer that
pork shoulder.
Shoulder, yeah, shoulder trim, shoulder chaps, part of the collar. You know, these are meats that don't actually render, but give you juice and succulence. Mm. And so I want people to bite into a sausage. It should be a fairly soft eat, but there should be succulence. Mm. And if you have picked field mushrooms and then cook them in a frying pan with a bit of bacon, it's that juice that comes off that is so delightful. Mm. And that's the meat juice that I'm seeking to retain within the sausage. And that's why we use bread, by the way, or bread crumb. So it absorbs those juices within the sausage. So you have a succulent, and isn't the word succulent good? It's a kind of succulent, sizzling sausage.
He's doing it for me, sir.
I've just bit into Charles's sausage earlier. What I'd like to say is you know, you get these artisan sausages, actually they're so densely full of meat. And we've got 95% meat in. Actually, I find those too harsh and they're not juicy. And I think the nice thing about these is that they are lovely sausages. They're really,
I think a sausage has to be fairly approachable. Mm. And a succulent, soft sausage is actually probably where we are with this.
Yeah. Is there any chance we can finish this interview now? I would really recommend those. I think they're fabulous. I would almost say actually that's the best sausage I've ever had.
Well, can I just say something? There's many ways of making sausages. Mm. You can make them this way, you can make them that way, or you can make them the Wester way.
And that's the way. You're based in Devon, aren't you?
I'm based in the heart of Devon, yes.
And how can people get hold of your sausages, Charles?
Well, we now have got nationwide distribution, and so we can supply through people like Booker and Macro. We also do Shell filling stations, so if you go into a Shell filling station and get a sausage bat there in a whirl, a world
really?
And about.
You see, I would assume that a garage selling sausage sandwich would be really rubbish, poor quality, but that's
well,
excellent.
I think, you know, that the people are asking more and more questions about their food.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And you know, and, that, and that's the premise you came in on.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And people are actually genuinely interested who produces their food, what is the story behind their brands, and you know, they like the charisma of Westaways and a story that goes back four generations, and my son's on the stand as well.
Wow.
And you know, we sell to 30 different countries now, so you can buy our sausages in Japan, you can buy them in India, you can buy them in Barbados, you can buy them in
Hong
Kong.
It's fabulous.
And that is about selling a British artisan product and finding other routes to market apart from, you know, the main faciers that are here in the UK.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, highly, highly recommended, and it's westawaysausages.com.
Fantastic. Yeah. Charles, thank you so
thank
much
you,
for
Charles.
That. Thank you. You have made my day.
Yeah, I need to finish this interview now. Very nice to meet
Take
you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Good luck. Cheers.